Chapter 39. What are these fleets that cross the sea from British ports and bays to coasts that glister southwardly behind the dog day haze? Rumors, chanting, semi-chorusy, they are the ship battalion sent to bar the bold belligerent who stalks the dancer's land. Within these hulls, like sheep a pen, are packed in thousands fighting men and colonels in command. Semi-chorus to the fleet that leans each airy fin far south, where Mondego mouths in, bears Wellesley and his aides there, and Hill, and Crawford too, with Torrens, Ferguson, and Fain, and majors, captains, clerks, in train, and those grim needs that appertain the surgeons not a few. To the mad 12,000 souls and linesmen that the list enrolls, borne onward by those sheeted poles as war's red retinue. Semi-chorusite the fleet that clears St. Helen's shore holds Bird, Hope, ill-omened Moore, Clinton, and Paget, while the transports that pertain to those count 60 sail, whose planks enclose 10,000 rank and file. Semi-chorus to the third sent ships from Plymouth Sound, with a Clanned, Anstruther, impound souls to 6,000 strong. While those, the fourth fleet, that we see far back, are lined with cavalry, and guns of girth, wheeled heavily to roll the routes along. Spirit of the years, enough, and more, of inventories and names. Many will fail, many earn doubtful fames. Await the fruitage of their acts and aims. Dumb show, continuing, in the spacious scene visible the far separated groups of transports, convoyed by battleships. Float on before the wind almost imperceptibly, like preen duck feathers across a pond. The southernmost expedition, under Sir Arthur Wellesley, soon comes to anchor within the Bay of Mondego aforesaid, and the soldiery are indefinitely discernible landing upon the beach from boats. Simultaneously the division commanded by Moore, as yet in the chops of the channel, is seen to be beaten back by contrary winds. It gallantly puts to sea again, and being joined by the division under Anstruther, that has set out from Plymouth, labors round Ushant, and stands to the south in the track of Wellesley. The rearward transports do the same. A moving stratum of summer cloud beneath the point of view covers up the spectacle like an awning. Seen by Street Cloud. The boudoir of Josephine, it is the dusk of evening in the latter summer of this year, and from the windows at the back of the stage, which are still uncurtained, can be seen the Empress with Napoleon, and some ladies and officers of the court playing catch me, if you can, by torchlight on the lawn. The moving torches throw bizarre lights and shadows into the apartment, where only a remote candle or two are burning. Enter Josephine and Napoleon together, somewhat out of breath. With careless suppleness she slides down on a couch and fans herself. Now that the candle rays reach her, they show her mellow complexion, her velvety eyes with long lashes, mouth with pointed corners and excessive mobility beneath its duvet, and curls of dark hair pressed down upon the temples by a gold band. The Emperor drops into a seat near her, and they remain in silence till he jumps up, knocks over some knick-knacks with his elbow, and begins walking about the boudoir. Napoleon, with sudden gloom, these mindless games are very well, my friend, but ours tonight marks, not improbably, the last we play together. Josephine, starting, can you say it? Why raise that ghastly nightmare on me now, when, for a moment, my poor brain had dreams denied it all the earlier anxious day? Napoleon, things that verge nigh, my simple Josephine, are not shoved off by willful winking at. Better quiz evils with too strained an eye, than have them leap from disregarded lairs. Josephine, maybe 'tis true, and you shall have it so. Yet there's no joy save sorrow waved awhile. Napoleon, ha, ha, that's like you. Well, each day I get sour news. Each hour since we returned from this queer Spanish business at Bayonne, I have had nothing else, and hence my brooding. Josephine, but all went well throughout our touring time? Napoleon, not so behind the scenes. Our arms a balin have been smirched badly. 20,000 shamed all through DuPont's ill luck. The selfsame day my brother Joseph's progress to Madrid was glorious as a sodden rocket's fizz. Since when his letters creak with querulousness. Napoleon el Chicote, as they call him, Napoleon the Little, so he says. Then notice Austria. Much looks lowering there, and her sly new regard for England grows. The English, next, have shipped an army down to Mondego, under one Wellesley, a man from India, and his marches south to Lisbon, by Vimiero. On he'll go, and do the devil's mischief ere he is met by unaware Junot, and chevied back to English fogs and fumes. Josephine, my dearest one, you have mused on worse reports with better grace full many and many a time. Ah, there is more, I know. Napoleon, kicking away a stool, there is, of course, that worm time ever keeps in hand for gnawing me. The question of my dynasty which bites closer and closer as the years wheel on. Josephine, of course it's that. For nothing else could hang my lord on tenterhooks through nights and days, or rather, not the question, but the tongues that keep the question stirring. Not reck you of throne succession or dynastic lines, when gloriously engaged in Italy. I was your fairy then. They labeled me your lady of victories, and much I joyed, till dangerous ones drew near and daily sowed these choking tares within your fecund brain, making me tremble, if a panel crack, or mouse but cheap, or silent leaf sail down, and murdering my melodious hours with dreads, that my late happiness, and my late hope, will over soon be knelled. Napoleon, genially nearing her, but years have passed since first we talked of it, and now, with loss of dear Hortense's son who won me as my own, it looms forth more. And selfish 'tis in my good Josephine, to blind her vision to the weal of France, and this great empire's solidarity. The grandeur of your sacrifice would gild your life's whole shape. Josephine, were I as coarse a wife as I am limbed in English caricature, those cruel effigies they draw of me. You could not speak more aridly. Napoleon, nay. You know, my comrade, how I love you still. Were there a long notorious dislike betwixt us, reason might be in your dreads, but all earth knows our conjugality. There's not a bourgeois couple in the land who, should dire duty rule their severance, could part with scanter scandal than could we. Josephine, pouting, nevertheless there's one. Napoleon, a scandal? What? Josephine, Madame Waluska, how could you pretend when, after Gina, I'd have come to you, the weather was so wild, the road so rough, that no one of my sex and delicate nerve could hope to face the dangers and fatigues. Yes, so you wrote me, dear. They hurt not her. Napoleon, blandly, she was a week's adventure not worth words. I say 'tis France. I have held out for years against the constant pressure brought on me to null this sterile marriage. Josephine, bursting into sobs, me you blame. But how know you, that you are not the culprit? Napoleon, I have reason so to know, if I must say. The Polish lady you have chosen to name has proved the fault not mine.
Josephine sobs more violently.
Don't cry, my cherished. It is not really amiable of you, or prudent, my good little Josephine, with so much in the balance. Josephine, how know you what may not happen? Wait a little longer.
Napoleon, playfully pinching her arm,
oh come now, my adored. Haven't I already? Nature's a dial whose shade no hand puts back, trick as we may. My friend, you are 43 this very year in the world,
Josephine breaks out sobbing again.
And in vain it is to think of waiting longer, pitiful to dream of coaxing shy fecundity to an unlikely freak, by physicking with superstitious drugs and quackeries that work you harm, not good. The fact being so, I have looked it squarely down against my heart. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.